Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
There's things that landed on the cutting room floor that I really regretted, but I also remember that my dad, Dan Jenkins, always said that the test of a good story is by what lands on the cutting room floor. So I knew the material was there, and I'm honestly still numb to it, Tony. I can't look at it or read it. I worked on it so hard that I can't see it. You know,
it's really good. Okay, you got me, you got Remnick, you got Israel. We think it's great.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The amount of love for that story is huge on social media. It's been pointed out to me by friends of mine.
Yes.
Curry Kirkpatrick wrote me the other day, said, give me Sally's number. I mean, you know, this is... Curry Kirkpatrick worked with Dan Jenkins for 1,000 years at Sports Illustrated. And that's... I've told a bunch of people, just read this story. This story's really great. So good for her. Good for her for being on the show, too. Let me just read this. This is from Jason Anschutz. I just returned home from an incredible week of golf that could not have happened if not for your show. Here's as much of the story as I think you might read. More than a decade ago, I met loyal little Bobby Gottfried on a trip to Washington, D.C. with a woman to whom I'm related by marriage. Bobby and my wife knew each other from a semester abroad in Australia. If my wife had stayed at Ohio State instead of going to Melbourne years before we met, none of the following would have happened. Bobby and I bonded over our shared love of the show, and he eventually invited me to play in an online trivia league where I now compete with some other littles, including the great Ed Butt. Last summer, I scored very well in a one-day quiz about golf courses. Next thing I know, there's an email from Ed in my box. He saw my score. He asked if I was a fan of golf architecture and history. A few emails later, he'd invited me to his home club, the legendary Crystal Downs in northern Michigan. I couldn't believe it. I still can't believe it. We started planning, and Ed went one step further, introducing me to yet another little, Chuck Pinter, who invited me to play his home course, the Kingsley Club. So last week, I had to pinch myself on the first tee at both of those extraordinary courses. Chuck drove 4 hours to host my group at Kingsley, and despite playing with a bad back, he crushed us, memorably chipping in for a birdie on number two. We finished up, and Chuck headed right back home. 8 hours of driving to host some folks he'd never met, all because of your show, Littles Helping Littles, indeed.
It's amazing.
We played the next 2 days at Crystal Downs with Ed. Michael, how close is that to...
So this is where I have to interrupt your story. I've been trying to find a way to get to Crystal Downs to play with Ed Butt for years now.
Yeah.
Our boys are big fans of a certain book that he shared with us about butts. so this is... my Google Maps would say it's about 3.5 hours from where I will be staying next week,
right,
which is in the South Haven, below the South Haven covert area.
Okay. All right. Ed was an incredibly gracious host, acting as both our caddy and club historian for 2 days, even treating us to dinner. We talked like we were old friends, sharing inside jokes from your show and talking about our shared connections. The course lived up to its reputation as well, with spectacular views overlooking Crystal Lake, helping to make up for our inability to putt on some of those challenging green complexes on the planet. The experience was unforgettable. Now, if that wasn't one in a million enough for you, what happened next truly was. After leaving Crystal Downs, I drove a half hour south to Arcadia Bluffs. In the pro shop, I asked if there was any way I could play the back nine as a single, since earlier in the week my group had been stopped at the turn due to a fog delay that prematurely ended our round. Luckily for me, there was a twosome coming up the eighth hole, and I was allowed to join. The other two singles were friendly enough, but on the 17th tee, the question came up. Why are you in Michigan playing golf? Not trying to brag too much, I said, well, a friend invited me out to his club. Oh, yeah, which club? Crystal Downs. Whoa! Bucket yeah. list place. How'd you swing that invite? I paused for a second and I said, this sounds so weird to say out loud, but we listened to the same podcast, the Tony Kornheiser Show. That's when my new playing partner yelled out, no way, La Cheeserie, is your friend Ed Butt? He's like, what?
All right, I'm going to start sharing my flight details. We arrive at Grand Rapids.
I've been paired with fellow emailer Steve Sigourney from Big Sky,
Love
Montana.
Steve.
Laura
right.
Little also happens to correspond with Ed on Twitter. We laughed uncontrollably all the way to the clubhouse. The odds had to be far more improbable than a hole-in-one. I've enclosed photos with Chuck and Ed and Steve. I hope you enjoy seeing the connections you and your show have helped make. I can't thank you enough. I can't say thank you enough to Chuck and Ed for extending their invitations to a golf nut all the way out in North Dakota. But I have to thank you as well, Tony. Your show made one of the most memorable weekends of my golfing life possible. Sincerely, Jason Anschutz in Fargo, North Dakota.
Connective tissue.
Just simply.
Makes me so happy to hear people have access to these courses and clubs, sharing them and making sure others get to experience them as well.
Yes. Yes.
So let me talk about golf for a little while.
Now we just need someone at the Dunes Club a little closer.
Shared experience I had with my son yesterday and with Courtney and with Pete Creedon as we played in the July 4th tournament at Columbia. Let me tell you how I started. We were starting on 18. Now, I was extremely worried about dying yesterday in the heat. And here's why. There were no carts yesterday because of the rain on Monday night.
About 12 hours before the first wave of the shotgun, there was about an inch plus of rain that hit the area.
Yeah, torrential downpour.
Significant rain. So I understood. I felt lousy about it. I thought maybe we were in the afternoon group and they'd let carts out, but there were going to be no carts. So I made a few calls. I called or texted two doctors and my trainer, Helen. I got responses from one doctor and Helen. The other guy was golfing and later said to me, how'd you do? And thanks, Chris. And so Helen said, I think you'll be all right. You walked last week. I think you'll be fine. Just start hydrating now. This was at 7 in the morning. Make sure you have Gatorade and make sure you eat bananas. And I wrote her back, ha, 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 I hate bananas.
Yeah, you're not a fan.
I don't eat bananas.
No.
Then I called my friend Peter Lazarus, who for many, many, many years was a pediatrician in Fort Worth, Texas, and had been a runner himself. And I sketched out the situation. And he said, Gatorade, just drink a lot of Gatorade. You're going to be fine. You're fine. You'll be fine. You drink a lot of Gatorade. So I made sure. I tried to get Gatorade. I only like the orange Gatorade. Not a Gatorade guy, Michael. You've known me your whole life. How many times have you seen me drink Gatorade?
Very rarely. Not a Gatorade guy, big orange soda guy.
Yeah, so I only want the orange. When we got to the shack at 8, I said to George, "What? I want some orange Gatorade." He says, I have blue, I have red, I have clear.
And you want the original. You don't want that Gatorade Zero.
No, yeah. I want orange. So, but there was luckily there was an orange, you know, at one of the stands as we went along. So I was okay. I was fine. I had no problems. Except
you had other problems.
I had problems. We started on 18. It's a straight ahead, long, good par four.
Classic par four finisher.
Yeah, it's finishing hole. Biggest green on the course.
Four leaf clover green.
I can't get four, even from the front tees. I cannot get there in two. It's not possible. I hit two shots, you know, that I hit very well in terms of distance, but I could never get there. And one of the reasons I could never get there was I hit my first shot into the right-hand fairway trap. Whoops. I was dead. I was dead. I couldn't get out. I was in, Michael, was I in six traps, seven traps?
In the first seven holes.
Yeah. And I couldn't get out of any of them with one shot. And if I got out, I got out 1 foot. And I'm just terrible. You know, it was just terrible. Trap after trap after trap.
Your body language was so negative.
Oh,
and
really?
I've been hearing about this for months, but I don't play golf with you all that often. It's not that just that you go into the traps. You're in unplayable positions because you're getting that advantage from the gold tees.
You're
up against the lips.
Oh, yeah. You can't do
anything. Up against the lip time after time after time after time. Because I hit it hard, it rolls in and rolls all the way.
And then every hole, it's like, why don't you just try and pitch that? You go, yeah, or I could hit the 7-iron.
I took a 7 on the first hole. I went 7-6-6-6. So I am, what is that, 9 over after 4.
I'm going to trust your math.
I'm 9 over after 4. I'm not helping the team at all.
No.
I'm 9 over after 4. I practiced on the range, on mats. You shouldn't practice on mats. They give you a false sense of security. I practiced this one pitching wedge shot from inside of 40 yards.
Yeah, the bucket shot.
And I hit it great on the range. Got out on the course, hit it three different times, stubbed it each time.
Oof.
Each time.
Wet Bermuda.
Yeah, just awful. And I didn't go nuts. I mean, I maintained what I thought was a pretty good attitude.
At one point, you lifted the wedge and you were ready to slam it down. But then you looked around and realized who you're with and you just sort of tapped down the divot.
Can't do it. But I also had 5 pars. And all of my pars count as birdies because I get strokes on every hole. The most baffling thing to me, and it sort of became useless, but it was interesting to me. I don't think it was interesting to anybody else because I don't think anybody else kept track. Did you have 4 birdies?
Yeah, I think so.
I had 4 birdies. On each of Michael's birdie holes, someone else in the group who was getting a shot had a par. So it negated... I mean, Michael's birdie, which would have been so useful,
right?
Didn't Didn't count, in effect.
Yeah, but that's the point of one of these holiday tournaments where it's officially a net tournament, and in our group of four, we're only counting one ball, and we could use that, whether it's gross or net, for this event. But
you almost chipped in on one.
It means that everybody felt part of the game. And so even
everybody
helped. Even if you were in pocket for the first six holes, you still felt like you were engaged.
Yeah, so it was great fun. Now, we finished 7 under. We did not get a sniff of shop credit.
Ooh.
I guess 8 under was going to be the last one. And it was my fault we were 7 under, even though I did net birdie on 15 and 17, particularly on 15 with a good putt.
That was a very nice
good
putt.
Downhill putt.
Good read from Joe.
But on 16, I screwed up the hole. That's a par 3, and I screwed up my chip shot, and I got 4, and you know, and we lost one on that.
Arch is going to be disappointed in me.
That you didn't carry us to victory?
Well, he was careering it on the Memorial Day tournament. He was 6 under on his own ball through the 7 holes we played.
Yeah, just amazing.
He's still complaining about that.
Yeah, he got washed off the course. So anyway, so we had what I consider to be a lovely time, even though we didn't win, didn't get anything. And then I came home, and after doing the chores that I have to do, I have not watched television other than sports or an occasional news show, and then just briefly, in 3 years, during the entire pandemic.
Yeah, it's been some time, hasn't it?
I've not watched a single entertainment television show. Not one. Haven't done it. Everybody says, why don't you stream this, and why don't you stream that? And you get Netflix, don't you? And you get that.
You didn't even watch the first season of Succession and got tired of it?
That was before the pandemic.
All right.
No, I haven't watched a thing. Not even Kerry Russell. Not even the Bear.
That's right.
Simmons told me, watch The Bear.
Oh, yeah. Season 2, episode 6. Yeah, everybody loves stressful.
The Bear. So Simmons loves The Bear. Haven't watched the thing.
Alternatively, Cocaine Bear, which is a fun movie.
With Kerry Russell as well.
I think she's in that.
Based on a true story. Maybe.
Based.
Maybe. I did something yesterday. This was appointment viewing for me. I watched The Capitol 4th.
Oh,
which culminates with the fireworks, where I have been in my life, and Michael has been in his life, downtown to the fireworks, which, if you get the chance to go, is wonderful. We had, in my life, I've been in positions of grandeur, right? I went once to the Canadian Embassy.
The best place to see
which
it.
Was great.
Great view.
I went
that.
A few times when my friend Brent Glass was running the Smithsonian, the American History Museum.
Oh, right.
To the
what
top.
A great event. You get to tour the museum. They have a nice little barbecue up on the roof.
Yeah. I mean, that's been great. So I wanted to see it.
Unlike going up to the Washington Post where it looked like you were meeting someone undercover in a parking lot.
Yeah, because you're up on a roof and you could fall off and you can only see half the fireworks and it was awful. Anyway. So I wanted to see that. And they always have lovely entertainment. And they had a few people on last night. They had Renee Fleming, who's a great opera singer.
It definitely skewed a little older.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it usually does. They had Belinda Carlisle on, whose name I vaguely remember.
The Go-Go's, right?
Yeah, she was, I don't know.
Yeah.
She was fine. She did 2 sets, like 4 songs. She was fine. They had Boys to Men, who I think are great. You know, I loved watching Boys to Men. And their finale act was Chicago. And I thought, okay, this has to end. You know, it's like, what are we doing here? You know that song where the recurring verse is?
I think it was the
Saturday
of July.
In the park. Oh. I thought it was the 4th of July. That's why they, you know, so they could sing that song.
Sure. The close-ups of them singing, they were very satisfied with themselves.
Yeah. I mean, okay. And then they sang us right into the fireworks and continued to sing during the fireworks, which I thought was nice for the television audience, but bad for them because they couldn't see the fireworks.
Yeah. But I think if you play that gig in that position, you're like, this is what it's all about.
I remember once, before the children were born, I believe, going down there to see the Beach Boys.
Oh, yeah.
And driving down, or because maybe there was a metro, but driving, parking, and going to see the Beach Boys. That's a lovely thing. Like everything else in Washington, it's free.
Yes.
It's lovely. It's your country. It's just wonderful. So if you got to see the fireworks, good. If you got to see them on TV, good. If you had a nice 4th, good. We will take a break. When we come back, Jeff Passan will join us. Baseball's half over. Dominic Smith has 4 home runs and 19 RBI. Baseball's half over. He's a power position hitter. What are we talking about? I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
There's a band called Stay Outside. This is sent to us by Gary Riggs in South Bend, Indiana, who writes, a fellow Little and I are co-producing live concerts in South Bend featuring independent artists similar to that which you feature on your show. I'd like to share with you the music of a band named Stay Outside. They're an indie rock project from the heartland formed by childhood friends Aaron Becker and Garrett Johnston. Quartet writes transparent, emotive tunes with expansive, anthemic crescendos. That's rock and roll, kids.
That's rock and roll.
I like that. This is called Overboard. The band is Stay Outside. We will play them again later in the show. And happy to do so. They play in Jeff Passan. Before I, you know, talk to anybody on this show, I write down a list of questions. The first question I wrote down yesterday was, this is the season of Ohtani, right? And then I found out that Mike Trout broke his wrist. So we'll get to the season of Ohtani, but there's impact on the season of Ohtani if Mike Trout broke his wrist. What happened?
Well, it's not a broken wrist, thankfully. It's the little tiny hamate bone that just screws everything up because right. it's like the appendix. It's a completely superfluous bone that does nothing. And you know how guys hold the bat in the big leagues, Tony? A lot of them are like a pinky down and yes. the knob sort of rests. That's how you break your hamate bone. It's just a really unlucky thing. And, you know, guys can be back within a month, but it's that sort of injury that lasts and lingers and saps power and can just be problematic. It also could take more than a month, by the way. You know, Jose Canseco missed 4 months with a hamate bone at one point. So, it stinks. It just, you know, Mike Trout has found himself in this really weird position where year after year he's just having these dumb injuries, if not end, then impact his season. And the impact on the Angels is enormous because even if he's not having a Mike Trout season, he's still one of the best players in baseball. And you know, the effect that this could potentially have on not just the Angels season, but the course of everything else throughout baseball could be profound, because if the Angels, with him down, with Anthony Rendon down, with Ohtani all blistered up now, if the Angels go on a skid, they have to face the idea of trading Shohei Ohtani before the deadline. And that is something that I think Artie Moreno in particular has just been scoffing at until now. But man, if the Angels are by, say, Tony, July 28th, not even close to a playoff position, they have to. It would be criminal for them not to consider doing it just because of what happens if they let Ohtani go and lose him in free agency.
Which is why every single baseball guest we have, the first question is, this is the season of Ohtani, right? He looms yeah. over baseball just in a giant manner. We had Richard Justice on the other day, and he said, look, I think he's going to go to the Dodgers. The people I talk to think he's going to go to the Dodgers. I mean, I was talking with Michael this morning before we went on. I said, to me, it makes sense if he goes to stay on the West Coast for proximity to Japan. But I said, nobody mentions the Giants. Maybe he would go yep. to the Giants. What are you thinking? What are you hearing? And do you think he actually will leave?
Tony, everyone thinks he's going to go to the Dodgers, which is what makes me so skeptical about it. If you look at the Dodgers under Andrew Friedman, they really don't sign mega deals for free agents. Like, that's just not his style. That's not something, you know, the sort of contract that Ohtani's going to demand right. is going to be unlike anything we've ever seen in professional sports. Like, you know, this is going to be one of those prime contracts for a soccer player where, you know, I think I read Lionel Messi is getting somewhere between $55 and $65 million to play for Inter Miami. That's going to be like the vicinity of where Ohtani is, except it's not going to be for a year or two or however long Messi's planning on playing.
Right.
This is going to be for like a decade. I mean, it's going to be a ridiculous, obscene contract, and only a handful of teams can pay that. I think your instinct is right, though. I think San Francisco is going to be a player, and I think Seattle's.
Well, they
be a
were
player,
a player. The San Francisco was a player for Carlos Correa. They're not reluctant to do this.
No, and for Aaron Judge, remember, like right. they were pretty confident for Aaron Judge. You bring up an interesting point with the Angels, and I think this is important to remember. Shohei Ohtani has never been about money. He just hasn't. He makes so much money off the field that the on-field money did not prevent him from coming over at 23 years old, even though the Angels only guaranteed him $2.3 million when he could have waited two more years and gotten 100 times that. The money was not important in arbitration when he could have fought to set new precedents and could have taken the team to a trial and did not do so. What's been important for him is comfort, right? And it's just like when you switch a job. When you go to a new place, it takes a while to get comfortable, to learn all of the different people, the personalities, what makes them happy, what angers them. You have to forge dozens of new relationships, and that's a stressful thing for someone in a normal job, and it's an even more stressful thing, I think, for somebody who's trying to do what nobody in Major League Baseball has ever done before. And do it for the fourth consecutive year next year, because what Ohtani's done in 2021, 22, and 23, it's borderline unfair. Like, it really is just how much better he is than everyone else.
He is. He's great. He's great at two different things. And the skeptics, and there were many, many, many more skeptics than believers at the beginning, he's won everybody over. I mean, I just, you know.
Yeah, I believed in him as a pitcher, and this is me introducing something that's going to make me look extraordinarily stupid. but I remember the first spring that he was over in 2018. I was with a bunch of scouts, and they were all just talking about how Ohtani's hitting is not going to work, and how if he's going to hit in the big leagues, he needs to go down to like double A or triple A and start off there. And they believed it because that's what it looked like in spring training. His swing was a mess when he came over here, and then he goes up to Los Angeles for the preseason freeway series, changes a leg kick to a toe twist, and the rest is history. Like, he adjusted on the fly. It was incredible. And it was like the quickest mea culpa column I've ever written.
Yeah.
Like 3 weeks after I wrote, you know, he's going to have trouble hitting, I started a column and it said, "Dear Shohei, I'm sorry." So he made a believer out of me really quickly.
Yeah, he did. It took Wilbon about 2 years. Wilbon was screaming, "No, he can't pitch. He's just got to be a hitter." And you go, "Mike, look at what he does. He's all right." We get off him because we talk about him all the time. There are two ways to go now, the sort of the surprising teams that are good and the surprising teams that are bad. Because I'm a cynic, I'd rather go to the surprising teams that are bad. Padres and Mets, right? Are they the most
yep.
disappointing teams in baseball, those two?
I'd say those two, the Cardinals and the Mariners, probably are the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. Why? I mean, who's more disappointing to you? It's so easy to say the Mets are the most disappointing. But I think people forget how much money the Padres have spent and how the Padres, their arrogance, I believe, was actually even worse than the Mets. What are your thoughts on that?
It's a hard one because, yeah, the Padres are spending $250 million this year, but the Mets are spending $350 million, and that's not even including taxes. So the Mets essentially are spending $350, Tony, to also bring back a pretty similar team to last year. And, hey, when you win 101 games, bringing back the same team is not the worst thing in the world, but there's been regression there, there's been injuries there, and there's been disappointing performances. So, you know, that's the 1-2-3 combo for a bad team.
Well, let me ask this, and it always comes down to this. You know more about baseball than I do. If you were running the Mets, and you had the opportunity to sign Scherzer and Verlander just for 2 years. It's not for 10 years. It's just, forget the money. It's 2 years. I would have done it. Would you not have done it?
I probably would have done it, but I also know that age is undefeated, man.
Right.
And that signing older starters is a really perilous thing, more because of the injuries than anything. And I know Verlander missed the first month, but they've been relatively healthy otherwise. They just haven't been as effective as you would expect of guys who are making $43 million.
Verlander won the Cy Young last year. How could you walk away from the opportunity to sign? You know, honestly, I mean, I'm in love with Scherzer and I'm in love with Verlander, but and maybe I'm in love with Tom Brady too much, and I think everybody is Tom Brady. But I would have signed them, and I don't know who wouldn't have, right?
Yeah, I think Verlander's market was probably pretty I mean, at that price, everyone's market is pretty limited. So there are not a lot of teams that are going to go out there and sign one guy at that rate, let alone two. The Padres, though, their spending this offseason has been a giant mess. Like,
yes.
Manny Machado signed a $350 million extension, has not been himself, has been banged up.
Hateable.
Darvish signed a $100 million extension, has not been good. Robert Suarez hasn't pitched. Jake Cronenworth has had, by his standard, a really subpar year. Like, for the most part, it's been money poorly spent. And the Padres, for the longest time, Tony, have been this collection of stars, you know, the longest time, like the last 5 years,
right,
has been this collection of stars, but an organization that hasn't had enough depth. And that's exactly part of what's hampered them this year. But you still see the individual performances. Fernando Tatis Jr. has been awesome. Juan Soto hasn't been, like, excellent, but just when he's himself, just like an average version of himself, is still one of the most productive players in baseball. Blake Snell over the last month has been the best starting pitcher in the league. Josh Hader, again, another all-star season as a closer. Like, the pieces are all there for them to make a run. I just don't know if they've got it, and I'm in a division that's really tough with the Diamondbacks, Dodgers, and Giants.
I mean, I root against them because Wilbon roots for them now. You know, he just, you know, Wilbon wants them to win, and they got more stars than the Mets. They got stars, you know, they do, and I'm glad they're not winning because Wilbon has decided to stick it to me for liking teams like the Mets and the Dodgers, that he'd go with this team. So anyway, all right, Jeff, pleasure. Thanks for coming on. Thank you, Jeff.
Pleasure's always mine, Tony. Take care, buddy.
Jeff Passan. That was lovely. We're halfway through.
Thanks, Jeff.
And we're dominated by Otani. We are. We'll take a break. Ron Cyrek will join us when we return from Pebble Beach, the site of the Women's U.S. Open, which begins tomorrow. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
She looked at me with a
Once again, this is Stay Outside. It's a straightforward rock and roll band.
Yeah.
Stay Outside. They're from South Bend, Indiana. Michael, if people like Stay Outside want to send us their original music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
And you can go see them, apparently, in South Bend, Indiana.
Yeah.
That's good.
Got a show coming up,
yeah. Yeah. They play in Ron Cyrek. And we're going to talk about the U.S. Open, Women's U.S. Open. It starts tomorrow at Pebble Beach. If you know anything about golf, if you like golf at all, there are in this country two iconic courses. Now, you can tell me there's a third or there's a fourth or there's a fifth, but there are two. If somebody limits you to two, Augusta is one and Pebble Beach is two. Augusta is private, Pebble Beach is public. Pebble Beach is pricey, but if you want to play, you can play. Just be prepared for 6.5 hours as everybody takes pictures. But you can play. We've seen it. As long as we've seen Augusta, we've seen Pebble. Any event at Pebble from the Bing Crosby on down is televised. I want you to tell me this. You put the women's U.S. Open at Pebble. That to me, Ron, is mythologically significant of something important in terms of the big time nature of the LPGA event.
Yeah, this is huge for women's golf because it's going to bring fresh eyes to the product. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to tune in to watch the Women's U.S. Open just to see Pebble Beach.
Yes.
And they've seen the men play the golf course. They're going to be curious, how are they going to set it up for the women? How are the women going to be able to handle it? And that's how you grow your product. You reach beyond your core fan base to those casual sports fans out there who maybe don't watch women's golf, but they're going to tune in this week and they might come back.
So this is interesting to me. They had their last major. The women have, I don't know, five majors, whatever they have. It's different than the men. But the last one they played was at Baltusrol. Baltusrol has hosted men's major events over a long period of time. This is two in a row at very big deal courses. Do they draw enough on television, in the live gate? Do they draw enough? How did they get Pebble? And what does that say about the future of women's golf, if anything, or am I overstating this?
No, you know, what the USGA has done, and then more recently, the PGA of America, which took over the LPGA Championship and made that the women's PGA Championship, which was at Baltusrol. What they've done is leverage their men's products to get better exposure for the women. You know, the USGA's gone to Pebble Beach and said, you want more U.S. Opens here? We want you to have, and they've got several other women's opens coming here lined up. And the PGA of America's done that by saying, you want a PGA championship, you want a Ryder Cup at your facility, you got to have some women's events there. So both the USGA and the PGA have done a great job of leveraging their men's products to get better exposure for the women's game.
I was a sports writer. I had to pay attention to these things. I watched women's tennis get what I think is very close to, if not exactly equal footing with men's tennis. I watched it over a long period of time. I watched the Women's World Cup in soccer dwarf the United States men's soccer effort in the World Cup. I haven't seen that kind of catch up in women's golf yet. Am I not watching or am I correct that gulf is wide?
You know, the gulf is wide, and women were playing for about one-fifth the prize money of PGA Tour players coming into the season, and that's before LIV Golf forced the explosion of all this added bonus money,
right,
designated events, and all that other money. Look, it's TV revenue that drives the purses for all sports. It drives the salary, mm-hmm, for all sports. It drives it for golf. And the LPGA yet does not have, women's golf doesn't have the same revenue stream from the TV rights that the men do. Now, again, the PGA and the USGA are leveraging their men's events to get TV exposure for the women, and there's going to be a record number of hours on NBC and its other networks, USA Network and Peacock, this week from here. That's all great for the women's game, but they got a long way to go to catch up to the men. And this year, because of LIV, the gap widened.
So if I were writing a column still, and I wanted to write a column about women's golf, and somebody asked me, or I asked myself, what do they need? I would say they need a superstar. I would point to Nancy Lopez. I would point to Annika Sorenstam, crossover superstars, which gets me to Rose Zhang and Michelle Wee, who seem to be pals. And I don't want to overestimate that, but you're on the ground out there, and you can tell me about Rose Zhang and Michelle Wee and whether or not she is going to be the superstar they need.
Yeah, you know, yesterday, Rose's press conference, she was incredibly impressive. She showed poise, she showed insight, she showed humor. She showed that she's sort of ready to deal with what's going to come her way. And there's a lot that Michelle could teach her, because Rose is the most ballyhooed rookie in women's golf since Michelle Wee. Now, she's already accomplished more than Michelle Wee did. She won, first woman in 72 years to win her debut event. Then her first major at Baltusrol, she got a top 10 finish in there. So this is only her third event as a pro. She's off to a great start. Oh, by the way, she does have the women's course record at Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
63. She shot in a college match. But what's fascinating about this week, Tony, and this would be a great column idea, is we're saying hello to Rose at the same event where golf is saying goodbye to Michelle Wee and to Annika Sorenstam, who are playing together at 8:28 tomorrow morning, going off the 10th tee here. And they're both in the U.S. Women's Open on special exemptions. And, Michelle won at Pinehurst in 2014. Annika has three U.S. Open titles. So at a time when we're saying hello to Ms. Rose, we're saying goodbye to those two. And you're also absolutely right. I've always felt the individual sports, tennis, golf, boxing, do better when there's a clear king or queen of the hill that you're trying to knock off. They do better when there's a Muhammad Ali out there or a Tiger Woods out there. And golf is searching for their next Annika Sorenstam, and maybe it's going to be Rose.
Can we go back on Michelle Wee for a second? My son and I were talking before we went on the air about this. She had great, great, great potential. But it seemed like it was important to the people around her that she beat men and not beat women. And she didn't go out and beat, you know, she didn't establish herself as somebody who won things. I think her career was really short-circuited. What do you think?
I think it was one of the greatest mismanagements of a sporting career in the 37 years that I've been doing this. What Rose Zhang, Michelle would have been better served if when she was 14, 15, 16, if she were winning junior tournaments rather than just trying to make a cut against professional men. You look at Rose. Rose won the 2020 U.S. Women's Amateur, the 2021 U.S. Girls Championship, the 2022 NCAA Individual Championship, the 2023 NCAA, and the Augusta National Women's Amateur. She's won at every step along the way. Oh, by the way, she won 12 times at Stanford in 2 years, breaking the record of 11 for career wins at Stanford set by Tiger Woods. So Rose has incrementally moved up. She learned to win and dominate every step of the way Tiger Woods did. I once asked Earl, were you ever tempted to turn Tiger a pro early? And he said, I was never going to do anything to hurt his confidence. My strategy was to build up a mindset of domination. And Michelle Wee was denied that.
She was. She was absolutely denied that. And Rose Zhang is Tiger Woods. She is Tiger Woods. Just look at what she's won. We are in this show partial towards her because she won at Columbia Country Club. She won the girls. She won the girls after she won the AM, which is sort of amazing, is it not?
That's never done. Usually, yeah, you win the girl. There have been several women who've won both the girls junior and the women's AM, but you do it usually. You usually win the girls junior first. And after she won that women's AM in 2020, the next year she was runner-up in the women's AM. So she has, as I said, cut her teeth by, and I'm a big believer in this, there's such a thing as learning how to win. She knows how to close out golf tournaments.
You wrote a story about her, and you said that there were three criteria for the jump up. You want to describe what you're looking for, why you think she can do it?
Yeah, you know, the first thing you need is talent. You got to be good enough to be able to compete at the highest level. The next thing you need is that competitive experience. You do have to learn how to win. But the third thing, and it's really a key thing, particularly with the women, because so many of them turn pro at an earlier age. You know, I've always said women mature before men, and we never catch up to them. They always stay ahead of us. But that maturity Rose has in spades, you know, and she showed that again yesterday at her media availability. And she had a poise about her, a self-deprecating humor about her. She seemed to me ready for what's going to come. You know, Tiger had an amazing ability when he burst on the scene to deflect stuff he didn't want to talk about at press conferences, and he knew how to handle that situation. He embraced it. And I'm seeing the same thing in Rose. She's ready for what's going to come.
I mean, it's a stupid thing for me to say, but these are people that went to Stanford. You know, I mean, that they went to the best combination of academics and athletics in the United States of America, right? I mean, Stanford is a great credential.
I think, again, going back to the Michelle Wee thing, I think having had at least a couple of years of college golf is hugely important. Because you grow up not only as a competitor in college, you grow up as a person in college. And Michelle ended up getting a degree from Stanford, but she went to Stanford after she was a professional.
Yeah.
And she will tell you, Michelle once told me, the accomplishment in my life I'm the proudest of is having a Stanford degree. And for somebody who was a very successful golfer, that's an amazing thing to say. And I do think that Rose benefited enormously from those 2 years in college, that she was able to grow up as a woman, as a person.
Thanks for getting up early for us. We'll talk to you later. I appreciate it very much. Thanks, Ron.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Talk to you down the road.
Ron Cyrek, boys and girls. We'll take a break. We come back with Email and Jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony's got notes from you. And he's got your emails too. Tony gets shoes for free.
Well, there's that.
So do you, Sean.
And he's got Tillamook ice cream.
Yes.
Tony's got a mailbag on the show. Tony's got a mailbag segment four. Tony gets your emails, but they're not on the screen. Nigel prints them out for Tony to read. Tony's got a mailbag.
Sean Cherry, boys and girls. We miss Sean.
We do.
Gotta get Sean back.
We love Sean.
Well, I think we're gonna see Sean because of the ceiling.
Oh yeah, the ceiling
has not gotten worse.
No.
And then when I head to the U.S. Open, we'll get him back.
Yeah, that would be great.
Not the worst ceiling.
But close. There's some ceilings worse, but yeah, I guess we can say that that's good for us. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel app?
Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you will be thrilled.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say I'm pleased and happy to repeat the news that we have in fact caught and killed a large predator that supposedly injured some bathers. But as you can see, it's a beautiful day. The beaches are open and people are having a wonderful time. Amity, as you know, means friendship. That's Mayor Larry Vaughn talking in Jaws. If you want to make a list, and everybody makes these lists, of the top 5, 10, 15, 20 lines that have come out of any movie of all time. I mean, for me, one of them, of course, is, well, I certainly hope you'll die soon from broadcast news. Yes. But on anybody's list, on everybody's list is, I think we're going to need a bigger boat. I mean, come on.
Which, that's, I believe that was an improv line. That was not in the script.
Is that right?
Roy Scheider. Yes.
I think we're going to need a bigger boat.
It's a brilliant line.
It's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, hello. Thanks to our guests today, Jeff Passan and Ron Cyrak. This was a good show. Early summer show, not much going on. Good show. Thanks to our sponsors, MeUndies and Rocket Money. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. Get the show through Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review. From Patrick Smith in Annandale, Virginia. Wait, Tony just flushed the dead mouse down the toilet? Why didn't he hang the dead mouse corpse on a rope from the ceiling as a warning to all the other mice?
That's how you do it.
From Scott Gurney in East Selkirk, Manitoba, right beside Saskatchewan. My sympathies on the mouse incident. The outcome was unfortunate but necessary. I do have a couple of questions, though. When you said, "Mr. Mouse, it's time to go," did you mean that in the existential sense? And two, Hokas or New Balance? New Balance. New Balance. From Dan Butterazzi, hope I pronounced that correctly, in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Did you think of giving the mouse the Barry Manilow treatment and tell it to get out of the state? Perhaps you could have had Nigel drive it to the border. So great that people remember that story when I used to write. From Kenny Ray in Fort Walton Beach, Florida. First and foremost rule for killing mice, leave the shoe, take the cannoli.
Yeah, it's only wisdom.
From Dan Stana or Stana in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. We can now update your stats. Buried 5 dogs and flushed 1 mouse. From Jason in Rockville, Maryland. Mr. Tony, the stripper making change in a bank story is so great. Larry David is going to want that for sure.
100%.
You think?
Yeah, it's got to be on code.
It's just, I can't tell you how many people at Columbia have come up to me because they listen. You know, I don't even know they listen. They listen. They go, stripper. It was a stripper. I said, yeah. From Peter Jennings, not that Peter Jennings. I thoroughly enjoyed the opening of the show last Friday, and not just your financial transaction with a male stripper. I was fascinated by your actually entering a bank to get change for a $100 bill. It's just so perfect, and immediately recalled our late dad doing the same thing many times with similar results. Juxtapose that brilliant discussion with your trepidation regarding the Qatar Sovereign Wealth Fund buying your once-beloved local professional franchises worth many billions and billions. Silver lining may be that I bet the local branch of the Qatar National Bank will gladly make change for your big bills, account or no account. Thank you for the wonderful entertainment. It's gold, Jerry. It's gold. We have a haiku for Dominic Smith from Shad. Whether you need him or not, every single day, he is at first base. He's at every game. Every single game.
4 homers and 18 RBI?
From, I think it may be 19 RBI. It's half the season. It's more.
Everyone knows he comes alive in the second half.
That's true.
John in Herndon, I was listening to you talk about the Nats on the Monday podcast. You said they aren't terrible. The Nats are 1.5 power hitters away from being okay. I have no idea how you get half a power hitter. From everything you've said this season, isn't Dominic Smith that half a power hitter? Or is he only 1/4 of a power hitter?
Maybe 1/4.
From Brian Becker or Betcher in Derry, New Hampshire, episode 83. That must be Chuck and Roxy.
Humble brag.
Through the games of July 2nd, here is a comparison of Mr. Tony's favorite power hitter stats compared to a future Hall of Fame pitcher's batting stats. Dominic Smith, 2023. 295 at-bats, 4 home runs, 19 RBI.
19.
Zach Greinke, career, 297 at-bats, 5 home runs, 23 RBI. Now, Greinke can't pitch anymore. He's now 1-9 this season.
Yeah.
He can't pitch. He's a better hitter than Dominic Smith. And Brian says, unlike this podcast, Dominic Smith truly does stink. I don't want to be too hard on him, but come on, you're playing first base. From Jamoke Davis. I'll be vacationing in Rehoboth this week. Thanks to you, I will be sure to stop at every stop sign with a full stop and make sure to use as little water as possible as to not incur an exorbitant water bill for our gracious hosts. From Todd Noftall, first time, long time. I'm in Hawaii this week, and I stumbled across the Aloha Tower. See attached photo. Yeah, it's a giant building. It's not the restaurant that Charlie Steiner.
See if you can
Charlie's order. Still got, and I know Charlie listens. Charlie's got, and he's more than a year now, I believe. Charlie's got the calendar.
Can I just take a second to thank Charlie for the recommendation of the Lee Michaels song, Heidi Ho?
Heidi Ho.
Yeah, love it. Thank you, Charlie. Yeah.
Is this the tower you've referenced in the past? I was there for a luau and tried to find a souvenir shop, but most of the complex has been taken over by the prestigious Hawaii Pacific University. They're surely a candidate for the Pac-12, and I was hoping their admission would bring some validity to an otherwise invalid conference, but I really don't care either way. Also, I tried calling News Channel 8 to get confirmation on the tower for either you, Michael, or Nigel. The receptionist hung up on me three times, and on the fourth attempt, she told me she would call the police if I call again. Well, I think you have a staffing issue there. Traffic in Honolulu is brutal, and it just started to rain. Please tell Michael. And from Sam in Richmond. Shares of Oatly up 17% over the last week. Keep yapping, Grandpa. Look, Oatly's terrible. I also found another ice cream that's terrible. I went to buy ice cream, to try another ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw something called Nix. And Nix is a Swedish ice cream.
Is it a tub or a small carton?
It's a small... You know, like the same size as Ben and Jerry's.
Okay,
and
so that's usually, the pint size is usually indicates quality. Size.
Okay. I wrote a triple chocolate is what I got because the other flavors didn't interest me at all.
Right.
I opened it last night. It's awful.
Awful.
It's awful.
And yet
it's from Sweden.
And yet you will finish the entire pint.
I will
scrape the bottom.
I will force myself to finish it. It's awful. I'm buying awful ice cream.
Yeah, we gotta work on that.
I gotta try something new. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
You so love that.
Yeah. and ask if I would sip the doom away. Count with coffee dripping off of my face as I conjured up a lie. The magic's gone, it'll fade away. Now all you have is all your yesterdays. Peace dangled right in front of your face. Like you can't reach, you can't reach. Cause it's something you can't teach. Maybe I should wait.
My cowboy shit.